Hi, I'm Lisa Davis. Welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM. This month is Autism Awareness Month, and today we are joined by It's Your Health children's expert, Dr. J. Stuart Ablon, to talk about using the collaborative problem-solving approach with children and teens on the autism spectrum. J. Stuart Ablon, Ph.D., is the director of Think Kids in the Department of Psychiatry at Massachusetts General Hospital. He is also Associate Clinical Professor of Psychology in the Department of Psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. Dr. Ablon co-founded the Center for Collaborative Problem Solving, where he also served as co-director from its inception until 2008. Dr. Ablon is co-author of Treating Explosive Kids, the Collaborative Problem Solving Approach, and author of numerous articles, chapters, and scientific papers on the process and outcome of psychosocial interventions. Dr. Ablon, it's so wonderful to have you back on the show. Can you tell us a little bit about the collaborative problem-solving approach?
Sure, happy to. And it sounds like today's focus, we're going to be particularly interested in the application of the approach to a certain population of kids. But it sounds like I should start maybe with a general overview, huh?
Definitely.
Great. So, you know, the idea behind this approach here, which was originated by Dr. Ross Green in his book, The Explosive Child, and has been elaborated for many years since and further developed, the idea behind this approach is a pretty simple fundamental premise that kids do well if they can, which suggests that if a child could behave in an adaptive way, he or she would, and if they're not, it's probably more complicated than they're not trying hard enough to behave well. And lo and behold, all the research has shown us that what really gets in the way for kids who behave in a challenging way isn't a lack of motivation, but it's a lack of skill. And that you could think of behavioral difficulties as a sort of a learning disability of a different type. These are kids who struggle with skills related to problem solving, flexibility, frustration tolerance. And so the collaborative problem solving approach, what it's all about is trying to get to the bottom of which specific skills a kid struggles with, under what circumstances during the day at home, school, other places, these skills cause trouble. In other words, what sort of triggers the kid given their skill deficits, and then to go about working collaboratively with the child, that is the adults and the child working together to try to solve some of the chronic problems that keep coming up. But it's the process by which those problems are solved where we practice the very skills that the kid lacks that are causing those problems in the first place. And that's it in a nutshell. It's thinking of behavior as a learning disability of sorts and setting about trying to teach the skills that the kid needs so that they won't be behaving that way in the future.
Well, I do it with my 5.5-year-old daughter, and she loves it. And she'll say to me, let's collaborate. Let's be collaborative. I like being collaborative, so it's really great. And, you know, how would you use this with children on the autism spectrum? I mean, obviously it's a spectrum. I mean, you have such a varying degree if the child is nonverbal or if they're verbal. But if you can just give us some basic guidelines.
Sure. Well, and it's a question we get a lot, which is, in a nutshell, can you use this approach or is it effective with kids on the autism spectrum? And, you know, in many ways, I think that kids on the autism spectrum are the sort of poster children, if you will, for this approach. Because when you think about the areas of skill deficit that we try to assess and then address, many of them are implicated in autism spectrum disorders, and some are sort of at the heart of it. And let me be more specific. One of the things that kids on the autism spectrum tend to struggle the most with that really leads to some of the biggest behavioral challenges has to do with what we call cognitive flexibility. It's just a fancy way of saying flexible thinking. Many kids on the spectrum are very rigid, concrete, literal, black and white thinkers, kids who really do well with predictability, with routine, with rules, but departures from rules, you know, exceptions to rules, departures from the routine, unpredictable circumstances, novelty, ambiguity, uncertainty, they really struggle with because they sort of need to have a template for how things are going to go. And if things go according to the template, life is good. But if things don't, they have a hard time, very hard time winging it. And these are also kids who get sort of really stuck on a thought, a way something's supposed to go, a solution, and have a really hard time moving off of that thought or solution. And the neat thing about collaborative problem solving is every time an adult sits down to do what we call Plan B with a kid, the adult and the child are on an adventure together where they're trying to understand each other's concerns and perspectives and work towards a mutually satisfactory solution that 9 times out of 10 is not the first solution that either of them had in mind, which means that built into the process is a lot of practice at taking somebody else's perspective into account, moving off of an original idea or solution, coming up with more flexible notions about how to go about things. And I actually can't think of, well, I mean, obviously I'm quite biased here, but I can't think of a different intervention or process, really, that does a better job of practicing flexible thinking.
I was thinking the same thing. No, I was just thinking that's exactly what you're doing. You're going to be giving them these skills that they need while they're working out these issues. It's perfect.
Yeah, and, you know, there are other skills that kids on the autism spectrum struggle with that I think our approach does a good job of teaching, but that there are other approaches that really do a good job of teaching them as well. And examples there are specific social skills that kids on the autism spectrum struggle with. And you can certainly use collaborative problem solving to try to teach those skills. But there's all kinds of other approaches that have been shown to successfully teach skills like that. But when you get back to what I find to be sort of one of the most stubborn things to teach, and again, at the root of many, many meltdowns and power struggles at home and at school, when you get down to a couple of those factors with these kids, they really center around flexible thinking and perspective taking. Can you move off of a perspective that you have enough to appreciate somebody else's perspective, take it into account? Can you work towards a solution that is slightly different than what you thought, that takes that other person's perspective into account? And I think that Plan B is the best practice at that. Now, the tough thing is it is really long-term, slogging through mud, tough work. And so when people say, so that works for flexible thinking, what they're expecting is you have 3 Plan B conversations and all of a sudden you have a wonderfully flexible thinker at your hand. And of course, that's not the case. It's all about repetition. Over time, you see it. And, you know, we try to remind people that standard approaches to working with these kids that have more to do with imposing your will upon them are adults demonstrating that we are having a hard time taking the kids' perspective into account. And clearly that's not going to be a good way of teaching a skill to a kid. And adults being inflexible is not a good way to teach flexibility to the inflexible child on the autism spectrum.
No, it's not. And I've mentioned this before, and you were great to correct me about the way I would say, well, my mother liked to do it this way. That was all the tools in her toolbox were limited, let's say, and she was very inflexible, and so was my brother. And so the struggles, I mean, you couldn't work anything out when you had 2 inflexible people.
Right.
Very inflexibility. Difficult. Although he asked, I have to point out, if he's listening, he would ask to collaborate. He said, let's work on this together. So he tried, but she just, kind of old school. You just do what I say, and this is the way it is.
Yeah, well, and oftentimes, unfortunately, inflexibility is sort of misinterpreted as just plain stubbornness. In other words, not being disinterested in somebody else's perspective, not caring and not trying hard enough and not wanting to. And, you know, that's, I think, one of the things that all of the research on the autism spectrum disorders has really helped bring to light, and that is that cognitive inflexibility isn't a choice. It's a wiring issue, and the kid comes out this way, and, you know, we can how you handle that is either going to try to help develop more skills in that realm or, unfortunately, perhaps reinforce a lack of skill.
Yeah, and you might have a parent that could be on the spectrum as well, you know. I mean, and they might have that same wiring. I mean, I definitely think that my mother was somewhere with that kind of genetic wiring herself.
Yes. And now,
that
interestingly,
makes a complicated situation.
It sure does. And interestingly, you know, you don't have to have a diagnosis to have a problem either. So you just need a problem to have a problem, right? So you could not be on the autism spectrum yourself, but be somebody who tends to be a bit more rigid than the average person. And if you're a parent who parents a bit more rigidly, even without being on the autism spectrum, and you have a kid on the autism spectrum who struggles with cognitive flexibility, now it takes two to tango, and now it's pretty likely that tango is going to happen.
Now, if you're a parent and you're listening and you say, you know, I kind of feel that I am a little bit inflexible and I'd like to change, what can they do to help themselves, to help their children?
Well, and so here's the other really cool thing about Plan B, and that is that it's not just the kids who are practicing their skills when you do Plan B. In fact, the adult is not only modeling those skills for the kid and helping the kid to practice them, but they're actually having to practice them themselves. So when somebody sits down to do Plan B, their first ingredient of Plan B is trying to get a really good idea of what the kid's concern or perspective about the problem is. And guess what that adult is being asked to do now? Take the kid's perspective into account, put themselves in their shoes. It's practice.
It's like everybody's learning. And that's
everybody's
so
learning.
Beautiful.
And, you know, what people find is Plan B is tough. Trying to collaborate with kids, particularly kids who might be quite cognitively inflexible, is tough. And what we ask adults to do is to pay attention to when it gets tough. Because when it gets tough tells you what the kid struggles with, but it also tells you what you struggle with and what you can expect in terms of your future attempts. And so when it gets really tough for you, you can remind yourself, aha, well, because that's why I'm doing this, because that's part of what I'm practicing here. The nice thing is, though, that we're not blaming anybody. It's a hard process. So we're just trying to pay attention to where people struggle and have them practice it.
Yeah, well, Dr. Avalon, as usual, this has been wonderful. And if you can give us information of how to learn more, because I'm sure everyone is like, oh, my gosh, I really want to learn how to do this.
Sure. We have lots of resources on our website. The program is called Think Kids, and it's a program in the Department of Psychiatry at Mass General Hospital here in Boston. And the website is thinkkids.org. That's the word think and the word kids put together, so the two Ks in the middle, thinkkids.org. There's all kinds of stuff on there, ways to learn more about the approach, learn from others, learn from books, from all sorts of resources online, videos, all kinds of things. But also there's a whole community there to get support in trying to learn how best to understand and help your challenging kid, your family, your classroom, et cetera.
That is fantastic. I absolutely love your stuff. It is so helpful, and it makes such a difference in people's lives. And to reach me, you can go to itsyourhealthradio.org. Oh, and I wanted to ask, you're going to be coming on every month, so I wanted to ask what you were going to be talking about next month.
Yes, sure. And, you know, actually a good time to put in a bit of a plug, too, that we have a message board and social networking community online at Think Kids. It's called My Think Kids. And we actually put a thread up there for people for this radio spot if people want to suggest areas that they would like us to cover in the future. So if people have some ideas, please pass them along. One of the ones that was suggested that I think would be important is the role of rewards and consequences, which, of course, is very different than collaborative problem solving. What should the role of rewards and consequences be in responding to behavioral challenges? What are they accomplished? What are they not accomplished? When should we use them? Should we never use them? How do we know the difference, et cetera? I thought that might be a good area of focus for our next time around.
Oh, that would be fantastic. Well, again, thank you so much, and everyone have a great week. Keep being healthy. Take care. Bye-bye. Dr. Avalon.